11 a.m. on your normal trash day.
All right, it is 3:10, and we are going to get started with our next presentation. Before we begin, let's go around the room and introduce ourselves. My name is Kendra Black, and I am Denver City Council representing District 4 in Southeast Denver, and I am chairing this budget presentation on technology services. And I'll start introductions with our mayor.
Michael Hancock, mayor.
Alan Salazar, Mayor Hancock's chief of staff.
Evan Dreyer, deputy chief of staff.
Sky Stewart, legislative director. Amanda Sawyer, District 5.
Chris Arnon, District 8.
Jamie Torres, District 3.
Amanda Sandoval, District 1.
Deborah Ortega, at large.
Brendan Hanlon, Chief Financial Officer.
Stephanie Adams, Budget and Management Director.
Laura Perry, Capital Planning and Programming Director.
Candy Sadavaca, District 9.
Robin Kinich, at large.
And Paul Cashman, South Denver, District 6.
Kevin Flynn, Southwest Denver, District 2.
Stacey Gilmore, District 11.
Joan Clark, Lackey, District 7.
Thank you, everyone. I'd like to welcome Dave Ettinger, who's the head of our technology services. If you'd like to begin, please.
Thanks, Councilwoman, and good afternoon. I'm hopefully you're ready for a nice late afternoon technology briefing. It's in some people's minds a lot like math, so I'll keep it fast moving, I hope. I'd like to introduce some of the folks on my team, starting with Deputy CIO Chris Binneker, Jenny Schiavone, who's the Chief Marketing Officer, Chris Todd in Operations, he's our CTO, Chief Technology Officer, and Chad Mitchell, our Chief Applications Officer. They're here for any questions that require a deeper dive. Thanks for having us here today. And first I'll start with our mission. And our mission is surprising, and vision is surprising to a lot of folks because it doesn't have a lot of things in there about servers and databases and operating systems and all those technology things. And that's because we see our mission as improving city performance. And technology is just a means to that end. And that's what we seek to do through our strategic plan. And so I thought I'd cover today our strategic plan at a very high level, talk a little bit about how we're organized, and then get into the budget requests. So we break down our strategies into four main areas. Reliability, access, innovation, and partnership. And that's how our team delivers that mission statement of improving city performance. Today we'll talk a little bit about two of those strategies, in particular reliability, which includes security and disaster prevention and recovery, because those are in some of our asks, and also the access strategy. So let's start with reliability. This is a big one for us. It includes a lot of things that that we pay a lot of attention to, starting with outages. And you can't really be a very reliable technology services department or IT department if you're not good at reducing and keeping to a minimum critical incidents. And I'll talk a little bit about those today. We'll also dive into one of our key asks is data centers, and we're going to be upgrading one of our data centers in 2019 from the lowest tier to the highest tier. That reduces our chances of having an offline incident due to an outage. What I'm talking about when I say upgrading, right now we have a data center, the one that I'm talking about, in which a water main break could take down half the city's operations. We'll be moving to one where they designed it in such a way that water could never pose a threat to us. Each year, we experience, on average, historically, about 5 to 10 environmental outages, meaning something's happened in the environment, like a bomb cyclone or something along those lines that cause us to shut down services to a major part of the city for a period of time. That's what we're seeking to do with that. And finally, you probably heard a lot about ransomware attacks lately on municipalities in particular. We'll be spending some time talking a little bit about that. But in Colorado alone, in last month, there were 4 major attacks, at least 3 of which were ransomware attacks. We assist those municipalities and other entities so that our teams can, one, do the right thing, but also so that we can learn from those examples and become better prepared at the city ourselves. We're seeing that across the nation. Florida, Texas, the city of Baltimore have all been severely impacted by ransomware attacks. We're shoring up our defenses here at the city and county of Denver against those. And I can get into a little bit of detail about that to the extent you have questions on that, but obviously we don't want to give away too much detail, so I'll wait to see if you have questions in those areas as we get to them. Okay, here's the first of what I love, which are slides with performance metrics on them. This one is about critical incidents. So first let me tell you what a critical incident is. A critical incident is not my PC is not working. A critical incident is an incident that lasts for a period of time and affects multiple users over an extended period of time. It's like the police system going down or an entire power outage that shuts down most of the city. And you can see in this graph where we're showing the last 3 years of critical incidents month by month. The darker line is 2017. And then the lighter blue line is 2018, and the red line is 2019. Those are the number of critical incidents we recorded per month. And you can see that through 2017, we were averaging somewhere around 50 to 100 per month. And we were closing in at about an average of 3 per day. And then in August of 2018, we hit our all-time high of about 103. And we said, this has got to change. We actually coined the phrase, arsonists by day, firefighters by night, because we were spending most of our time cleaning up the messes we created during the day with the changes that weren't following proper processes around incident management, problem management, etc. So we made a concerted effort over the last year, and I talked a little bit about this at last year's budget presentation, to try to bring that down, because if you're always fighting fires, meaning critical incidents, you're not going to be very effective at innovating and doing the things that are in our strategic plan. You can see that in September of 2018, we brought that number down, not to our goal of less than 30 per month, but we brought that down dramatically. And then we kept bringing that number down. And through this entire 2019, we haven't exceeded our goal of 30 per month. We have a 73% reduction in critical incidents year to date, which is a phenomenal tribute to our staff not doing anything with technology, but paying attention to the basics around process improvement and making sure that we were communicating with each other so we weren't breaking things. In December of last year, I just remember these numbers off the top of my head, we had 23 critical incidents, only 3 of which we caused. Okay, that's pretty good. 2 of which we knew we might cause, and one of them caught us off guard. But compare that to when we were having 103 in a month, it's a dramatic difference in how we operate the business. Second strategy, innovation. Obviously part of what we intend to do day to day. And the first thing that comes to mind is project delivery, but I won't spend too much time on project delivery. Project delivery just means delivering the projects that are in demand from our city agencies and partners. What I want to talk about instead a little bit is technology modernization. And this is important for some of the budget asks that are coming up later. What I'm talking about with this is taking our 300-plus applications and the complex web of operating systems and databases that support that across many different versions and trying to pare that down to a number that's much more manageable and affordable for the city and county of Denver, which shores up our security but also allows us to deliver. I'll give you an example. One type of system we have are case management systems. We have 53 different case management systems in the city. We're trying to move to a model we call the product model, which allows us to have, in an ideal world, just one case management system, not 53. Maybe 2 or 3, but not that many. And that allows us to break down technology and all the back-end stuff that you can't see, like the servers and the databases and the operating systems, et cetera, into a manageable number that we can both afford and support. One of the things that I'm really excited about that we celebrated for the first time, you've probably heard the term go live. That means when you go live with a new product. We celebrated for the first time this year a go dead. So when we retired Pilar and moved all the data out of that old permitting system over to the new system, Acela, we were able to shut that down along with the 12 or so servers that supported it and the operating systems that were potentially a cybersecurity risk for us. So by consolidating that and really celebrating go deads as well as go lives, we're making progress on our innovation strategy. Now, here's kind of a high-level look at innovation. It's very difficult to measure at a citywide level, but the way we're kind of looking at it here is how much does the government produce, how much does the city and county produce versus when we started in 2011, and how many people does it take to get that work done? So in 2011, or in 2018, over those 7 years or so, we produced 55% more government widgets, for lack of a better term. That can be anything from permits issued to 911 calls responded to 311 calls answered, to pretty much everything in the kitchen sink that we can measure. We just took all those growth rates and averaged them, and we produce about 55% more than we did in 2011. But we only have 19% more FTE, 19% more people than we did. And the answer, I think, in large part to how we were able to accomplish that, it could have been that our customer service levels dropped, but in fact they didn't. Wait times dropped pretty much everywhere in the city. We dropped the average wait time at the DMV from an hour and 10 minutes down to about 15. CPD, Community Planning and Development's wait time from 4 hours, believe it or not, down to about 20 minutes. So quality didn't suffer. Innovation was the answer. Not all of that was technological innovation. A lot of it was process innovation. Some of it was organizational innovation. But a lot of it was based on the work of the people who do that work day to day, finding better ways to get it done. The third strategy, access, this is really around information and data. And so, you know, data is usually what you think of in terms of spreadsheets and that kind of thing. Information is just the way in which we provide information to our constituents. We're doing a lot we have a lot of data, but we have a long way to go in terms of how do we serve that up to them in ways that make sense. So I'll show you in a little bit how we're doing great at some of the basic metrics on this front, but the more complex ones and the more challenging initiatives, that's where we really have some opportunities. I'm talking about things like outbound notifications and chatbots and ways to provide people with the information they need before they even know to ask the question. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the initiatives there. This is an example of one of the basics. This is just call answer time since January 2018 for 311. And you can see that's dropped dramatically during that time. We've been able to make some process improvements and other innovations to get that number down below the threshold or the industry standard of 60 seconds. The last few months it's been about 27, 30 seconds, something like that. Those are very good times, as are all the other basic metrics around customer service at 311 right now. Things like call abandonment rate. It used to be 25% of the callers hung up, now it's less than 5%. First call resolution, we answer the call 60% of the time. One of the things that we're trying to move on to now are those bigger challenges that I mentioned, things like, can we figure out how to let you know, well, you've already seen this, when your trash collection is going to happen, so that you don't need to call and ask when is it going to happen, but in fact, we're letting you know in advance that that's going to happen. One of the ideas that we've had and been working on for a while is, can we let you know if a street closure is going to impact your ability to go from where you live to where you work or vice versa during the day? Can we proactively do that based on the information we have at hand? Our last strategy is partnership. This is perhaps the most difficult one to measure. We are seeking ways to partner with our agencies to identify their needs in advance so that we can help them. One of the examples of that is working with the Department of Safety. We've identified over 1,000 databases and applications that they're using and trying to find ways to work with them to rationalize that back to the point I made earlier. How do we break that down into fewer and fewer so that we can, one, support them the right way on those applications and databases they truly need to run their operation, but two, that technology services can have the skill sets in its technological staff to support that. And here's one last graph that I'll show on this. So this is called Net Promoter Score. And Net Promoter Score measures the thousands of responses we get from 311 constituents, people who call or another way contact 311, and we're basically asking them on a 10-point scale, how did you feel about the service we just provided you? And we calculate this metric called Net Promoter Score. And Net Promoter Score is simply the percentage of folks who liked what you did minus the percentage of folks who didn't like the service they got. And on a 10-point scale, basically a 9 or 10 is the folks who like what you did, and anything up to a 6 is those who are detractors who didn't like that. And you subtract one from the other. So that could be anywhere from negative 100% if you were terrible to positive 100% if you were great. In this case, we're at about a little less than 20%, about 15% overall. Excellent in the industry, believe it or not, is about 20%. But what you can't see in this graph, and it's been pretty steady for a while, what you can't see is the difference between our Net Promoter Score when we handle the call immediately, meaning a simple transaction, the kind I was describing before, and when we have a more complex transaction. So a simple transaction might be, what time does the rec center open? And the agent tells the caller, it's open until 8 o'clock. A more complex might be, I'm requesting a stop sign at this particular intersection. We then have to hand that call off to Public Works or some other right-of-way group in the city. And at that point, things start to break down. So on average, when we handle the call immediately, we get about a 70% MPS score, which is much higher than this. And obviously, if 70% we're getting on the simple ones, we're getting a much lower, probably negative, it is in fact negative, response on the more complex transactions. So the challenge ahead of us is to try to integrate our central nervous system of 311 into the rest of the city operations. So that's the overview of the strategic plan. Happy to answer any questions on that later. Overview of the divisions, the main changes over the last 12 years, or the last 12 months to TS, to technology services, have been the creation of the data team to help us with access and to help us use data more effectively. That was all formed with existing personnel who were sort of scattered throughout the organization. We now have that team in place. Second, we recently merged 311 into Denver Marketing and Media so that we can have an integrated approach to our customer experience. And third, we're elevating the security team directly to report to me, given a lot of the threats that are happening. We felt that that was a change that needed to be made, and we're in the process of hiring a chief information security officer, which I hope to have wrapped up in the next month or so. So I'll quickly go through the teams. First, applications, probably the number one thing to look at there is the 300 plus applications. I actually think it's in excess of 400 applications. It's a lot to manage. And when you think about all the servers, databases, operating systems, et cetera, supporting that, that's the complex web that I'm talking about of technology. Applications is headed by Chad Mitchell. And operations is headed by Chris Todd, both of whom are here today. The operations you can think about as the physical infrastructure, the hardware, and the equipment necessary to make the city run. Three of the other divisions, DMMS, now includes 311, as I mentioned, as a broad array of services and, to agencies and directly to the public. That's led by Jenny Schiavone. Our project management office is a division that's primarily for delivering the projects. And the newly formed data team, led by Paul Kresser, is handling our access to data. Now on to the budget proposals. The first one is the data center. And this is what I was talking about with the 5 to 10 environmental impacts that we're hoping to greatly lower. A data center outage is highly costly. So it can be in the millions of dollars if it's for any extended period of time in terms of our ability to serve our constituents, lost wages, deferred revenue, et cetera. We are also, through this process, addressing several audit recommendations, including the proximity of the data centers to the core of Denver. So we're able to move this data center while still in Colorado outside of the Denver immediate Denver area, which is meeting one of those, and greatly improves our disaster recovery profile as well. So that's the data center, and that's essentially $600,000 of leasing costs to move to that facility, which will take us from the lowest possible tier, tier one, to the highest possible tier, tier four, which is where Denver, a city the size of Denver, should be. Maintenance and licensing. This $3.4 million essentially allows us to maintain our existing software and other technologies in the state that they're in and allow us to upgrade those over time. That $3.4 million represents about 11% increase. And I'll tell you right now, that 11% increase is not okay. It's not sustainable. It's not something we intend to keep going, and we have some strategies for how we can lower that in future years, but a lot of it has to do with reducing that portfolio. When you have to pay maintenance and licensing costs on over 300 or 400 applications, all the operating systems, et cetera, so all of a sudden those costs of having 53 different case management systems or 23 of this or two of this, they really add up. And so rationalizing the whole whole technology mix is key to us bringing that in line in future years. But this is what we need in order just to maintain what we have today and ensure that we're able to maintain security patches, et cetera, over the course of the next year. circuit increases. Circuits are what we use to provide broadband and Wi-Fi into facilities in the city. The drivers for increasing the cost of circuits, whether they be at a rec center or a library, et cetera, is really twofold. The first is we have new sites that we're bringing up online, or we have existing sites that we're upgrading. So just the number of new circuits that we're putting in those places to bring those up to speed with sort of current demand is costly in and of itself. And in 2018, we added 77 locations, 2019, 106, and 2020, we plan to hit about 110 new or upgraded locations. So it's just a continuous rollout. The other driver to this cost increase is just a rate increase. So we're still receiving a market rate from our vendors on this, but we're paying more than we have in years past. And between the additional sites and the additional cost per site, we're seeing a need for an additional $500,000 there. Red Rocks video coverage, it's hard to believe, but Red Rocks continues to add shows each year. DMMS is responsible for the video support at those events. And while this amount is completely covered for by revenue from arts and venues, in order to keep up with the expected pace of expansion, $150,000 just to continue to do business at the same standard we've been providing that. Reductions. I feel pretty good about most of these reductions based on historical norms. We were able to reduce everything but the operations section. Just based on past, I also feel good that the investments we're making in the circuits and in the data center will allow us to reduce the operational budget by $850,000. But I do want to point out that it's cutting it close in the sense of as agencies have mid-year requests, TS won't be in a position to necessarily respond mid-year with the technology that's being requested because we are cutting back on this budget item. Somewhat significantly, but generally speaking, I think we'll be okay. And if we get in a situation where that changes, we can always ask. In terms of race and social justice initiative, the two that come to mind are the new data center and the circuit increases. Obviously, that's improving the reliability. The data center is improving the reliability of our operations. And the circuit increases are expanding access to Wi-Fi and broadband and the internet for our constituents. Neither one of those have a community impact. Both of them, to the extent that the city serves vulnerable populations, should tend to impact those populations in a positive way. And finally, I talked a little bit about the FTE. They dropped slightly due to some operational or some organizational changes across different departments. There were a few FTE that moved to general services. We've already covered the expansions, and the revenue decline is due to a couple of factors. One is we are no longer, it's really an accounting change, we're no longer billing non-general fund agencies for dedicated staff that we provide, and two, cable franchise fees are declining with declining membership. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you so much. First up is Councilwoman Ortega.
Thank you, Madam Chair. David, we had a conversation in committee like a week or two ago when we had a contract coming through, and I asked the question about the fact that we have a lot of fiber that Denver owns, and when you look at the fact that we see increasing fees, I want to know what kind of look you and your staff have taken at having us utilize, and I don't know what the condition of that fiber is, but if it is technology that we can utilize where we already have connectivity, I can't remember how many buildings it was that we were told, but it was a pretty significant amount, where we could be, you know, doing some of these things on our own without having to rely on some of these other companies that just keep changing, you know, increasing cost on services and fees and all of that stuff. So can you just speak to that issue, whether you all have really kind of taken a thorough look at the fiber that we have throughout the city? We're one of the most connected cities in the country.
Right.
And so just knowing that we have that, I think would be important to really see how we could utilize that in a much more effective way where we own it, we control it, you know, we would have our own security connected to it, all of that.
Sure. Thanks, Councilwoman. Yeah, we're looking at it both from just how can we take advantage of it in terms of our existing facilities that are all over the city and how we can use the fiber we have to then just cross that last mile. The fiber system is primarily used for the traffic network, but has a lot of extra capacity that can be used in those ways. It does pose some the primary thing that we're concerned with right now is the security concerns resulting from connecting that network, which is designed for traffic, to the rest of the city network in a meaningful way. It doesn't mean it can't be done or isn't a good idea. It just means we have to do it very carefully.
Well, those other companies have figured out how to use their existing connectivity to roll out new services to the rest of us that we're paying for, right?
Right, so. Right. Yeah, it's absolutely something we're looking at and trying to find ways to really leverage that.
I appreciate that. I think it's really important for us to keep exploring that. Let me go on to a couple of other questions that I have. So I know that our revenues are declining because more and more people are no longer subscribing to cable TV, but we still have two companies that collect revenues that come back into our coffers. How much of those revenues are offsetting the costs of some of the other components that have been combined with that unit? Are we covering part of the cost of the marketing part of IT?
Oh, I see. Yeah, so those are peg fees is
right.
What we're talking
correct.
About. Yeah, so
correct.
Public, yes. Educational, and government.
Yes.
Those are being used for those purposes. We're not using those to offset operational costs, to my knowledge. Is that right, Jenny?
Correct.
Yep.
Okay.
So they're not being used for that. They're just being used for the public, educational, and government uses that they're originally intended for.
How many community access programs do we have where they do the taping? We used to have, you know, one in 5 points, and that moved and was Denver Open Media. We had one at Auraria. Are there any others, and are we still funding Denver Open Media? Can you just clarify those?
Absolutely. Jenny Schiavone, Chief Marketing Officer. So we are still supporting with PEG fees the capital needs for public educational and government media access. Right now those include Channel 8 as part of that from a capital standpoint. Education includes Auraria, their higher education media center on Auraria campus. The Emily Griffith Technology College operation, which supports DPS, so it's educational programming for DPS as a whole. And for Open Media Foundation, our contract with them did end in December. We stood up, they're still functioning. They were a nonprofit before they were receiving PEG funds. They're still functioning and providing classes and services to the public, and then they can give us their content to program the community access channel.
Were they allowed to keep the equipment?
They are still using city equipment, yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Where is the Davis Center that you referred to, and is that a location where all of the IT services are consolidated?
It will be one of our data centers. So we're moving out of an older facility located here in Denver that was initially designed for a completely different purpose.
Is that the one in Baker?
Without giving anything away, it's one that's in that part of town.
Okay.
And we're moving outside, again, not wanting to disclose exactly where it's located. It's significantly farther outside of the Denver boundary, which met one of the audit recommendations that's sort of just basically best practice to not have all of your data centers located immediately within your city confines in case of a attack of some kind.
So part of our real estate is outside of Denver, is what you're saying.
Sorry, what's that?
Part of our real estate where these are being sort of managed.
We're moving to a professionally managed facility that was designed exclusively to meet these Tier 4 standards and hosts a number of other large companies and organizations about our size. But we're not moving outside of the state of Colorado, though it does open up our ability to do quick and frequent backups to locations outside of the state of Colorado, which is another finding that we wanted to meet.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
I have no further questions.
Thank you. Next up is Councilwoman Kanich.
Thank you very much. My first question was about, and I'm in the, I'm going to confess that I did not get to read this section. It's the last section of the book,
and I was
behind in my reading. So I was trying to find, we had worked hard to get some contract oversight FTE into the office. You have a lot of technology experts, but there are contracts that are managed, particularly on the cable franchise type things, very complicated contracts. Mm-hmm. Does that FTE dedication still exist? And I just couldn't see anything with a name like that, but there are some fees like cable franchising that have dollar amounts. So I'm just trying to figure out if the contract oversight FTE is still there.
Yeah, we still have the same level that we had a year ago today.
And what is that?
That's how many? One that I know of.
One. Yeah. Okay.
Are there more than the one?
Just one. Got it.
For PEG and cable.
Okay, super. And then can you just clarify again, and I might have missed it, in the presentation, the public access TV support is going up from 322 to 1.8. So can you just explain?
Was that on a particular slide, Councilwoman?
It's on slide, no, it's on page 609 of the budget book. And I'm assuming since PEG fees are going down, it's a transfer of dollars from line to line for some reason perhaps, but it looks like a significant increase. Which is a 458% increase, in fact. So page 609.
Oh, I see it. Yeah, public access TV support. Jenny, do you know the answer to that question? Or Brendan or Stephanie?
Not off the top of my head.
I'm not sure what that is, no. But we can look into it and get back to you, Councilwoman.
Yeah, unless Brendan
knows.
Stephanie.
I don't recall off the top of my head, but we have the backup details of this line, so we'll get it to you for tomorrow.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
An email or something's fine.
Great.
Thanks. Thank you.
Next up is Councilman Hines.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for Mr. Ettinger, or Director, excuse me, CIO?
Whatever you,
I'm just
whatever
keep
you think,
titling
Councilman.
At you. Thank you for coming. So I have two kind of groups of questions. The first is about security. We've talked a bit about, or you talked a bit about ransomware and whatnot. To Councilwoman Ortega's point, we just had a presentation about extending contracts for a telecom vendor, and I think the additional contract amount was about $1 million. But made me think about security and our own ownership of our information delivery systems, specifically, you know, our fiber network that Denver owns. And I learned in that same conversation that there are other vendors, telecom vendors, that own wires going into city buildings. Just from a security perspective, does that concern you? Or I mean, maybe I'm concerns me, but I'm not you, so I don't.
Yeah, that. All of that concerns me and keeps me up every night, Councilman. And I think we are addressing all of those concerns as we are become aware of them. But I don't know that I have any specific answers I can share with you in this forum about that. Would be happy to talk with you about it in more detail.
But sure, and I don't think I asked necessarily a specific question, but how come you didn't answer it? No, I'm, obviously I'm kidding. So from a security perspective, that does seem somewhat concerning, and if there is a budget ask at some point, I think it's worth investigating so that we do maintain ownership of our own data and information delivery so that we don't have businesses or, you know, companies going out of business and then kind of screwing us, excuse me, creating challenges for us. And then the next set of, or next question is about expense. So I think that we authorized an additional $8 million for this particular vendor. I noticed on slide 17 you had an expenditure request of $500,000, so $500,000. You don't have to look it up. So in general, I think that the explanation of the $8 million additional for this vendor was because we couldn't move quickly enough we have to renew the contract as we put out an RFP for more information in the future, but I guess I would say from a budgeting perspective, if we could spend that $8 million at some point in the future, I'm not saying, you know, I recognize why we're spending this $8 million, but you know, if we invested the $8 million in reclaiming more control of our own data, I think that makes sense. So for the future budgets, or if there's something that I mean, I think we're maybe too late for a 2020 budget, but right. Just putting it out there for you.
No, thank you, and that's a good comment, and we'll look into it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Councilwoman Gilmore.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dave, thanks for your presentation. I'm on page 608 in the budget book, and under capital project funds, it has a reduction of a little bit over $10 million. And I understand that there needs to be reductions, but I, on that line item, it talks about decrease in capital improvement due to reductions. And the other innovation projects, I understand, but it also lists technology system upgrades. And I wondered if you might be able to talk a little bit more about if we're reducing that investment and we might be seeing an economic downturn when we, I just, when it says technology system upgrades, are we going to be, I guess, behind the eight ball when it comes to security and other software upgrades?
Right. The answer is, thank you for the question. The answer is no, we will not. So of the, and you're, I believe you're talking about the capital project funds, the last line item?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Of 10, so about 8 of that, is that right, Stephanie, is the innovation fund. So that means $8 million less of new technology, and then the difference of about approximately 2.2 is where we were able to find ability to decrease funding without impacting our ability to stay current or in line with all of the asset and the maintenance of that asset that we'd want to maintain. So to answer your question, it's not impacting our ability to offer the existing level of maintenance, licensing, security, et cetera.
Okay, perfect. That's the answer I wanted. And then on page 607, halfway up the page under general fund revenue, there's a miscellaneous other line, and it's showing a variance of over 6,800%. And I just wondered if you could talk us through that line, or if you don't have the specific information, a follow-up email would be fine. But it's a variance of about $960,000, but it's a huge increase. So just wanted a little bit more background information on that.
That's the SRA.
Go ahead. Oh. Stephanie, do you want to just answer that?
Sure. So, Councilwoman, part of on an annual basis, when we award dollars to tech services, in the past we've done a transfer to their Strategic Resource Alignment Fund, and it does various things for technology services. And as we were looking for budget savings across the city, TS looked at that particular fund and recognized they had about $960,000 available that they were hoping to use in 2020 as projects arose, but understanding that we had some need for budget savings, offered that up as part of the budget savings. So it was actually a different fund, and we actually used that as revenue into the general fund.
Okay, perfect. All right, thank you. That's all my questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And next is Councilwoman Kneach.
Sorry, I was blown by my 400% increase, so I forgot my other question, which was, I think it might relate to slide 17, I'm not sure, but I had been working with Parks and Rec and Technology Services over the last couple of years about the question of Wi-Fi and recreation centers in terms of how many youth do their homework and hang out there, as well as just if our goal is to have users exercising, streaming music is the primary way many people do their exercise now. So I'm curious, the slide is a little confusing because it talks about it says circuit increases, but then it says this request fulfills our contractual obligations to maintain current service levels. So it's either an increase or it's maintaining. I think it's hard to do both. And then secondly, if there are any metrics you can give me on where we're at, and this might be something you can provide afterwards or whether it comes in the Parks and Rec presentation, but where are we at with providing public Wi-Fi access through recreation centers?
where are we at in terms of
completing the access? I was thinking about, like, we are at 7 rec centers now. We want to be at 11 by the end of 2019. Like, what's the metric by which we're expanding access?
Right. I think when it comes to the rec centers, we're very close to being complete. Is that right, Chris?
I think so.
Yeah. We can get you the numbers on those, okay. But the last time I remember getting an update on that a few months ago, we were planning on completing those upgrades to the rec centers within the next 6 to 12 months.
Great, and then if you can just maybe confirm for me the service level, because I was told it would not be for streaming, so that you could, you know, you could check your email, but you could not listen to music, and so I was just curious if that is accurate.
We'll have to check on that, unless you happen to
know. Got it. From the user perspective, that's what Wi-Fi is used for in most recreation centers.
Yes.
Thanks.
All right, Councilwoman Ortega.
So this is an equity question, and it sort of gets at the heart of the question that Councilwoman Kanich just raised. As we are gearing up to do the 2020 census, which equates to dollars that come back to our community, it's going to be really critical that we have access at various places throughout our community, including our rec centers and our libraries. Are the libraries under our IT department?
They're actually separate. Yeah.
They are separate. Okay. So they're working with us to try to make sure that this is going to be the first year it's an online census. So it's really critical for people across our city, and particularly for those who are not connected to the internet, to have access at various resources. And we're in the middle of trying to assess how many of our churches and some of our other nonprofits would have secured systems where people, you know, feel like it's a trusting place to go to then fill out their forms. So April 1 is census count day, and everybody's expected to fill out their online, to go online and fill out their form. So do you know whether we would have those all done by then, all of our rec centers?
All the rec centers? I don't know that it was specifically by then, but I can find out and get that back to you right away.
So,
like I said, my last recollection was that we were very close.
If you could prioritize the ones that are in what are considered our hard-to-count communities, and all you got to do is look at the equity map to know where those are at, so that we make sure that people in these communities that don't have connectivity have a place to go to fill them out. There was one other question. This is on page 610 of the budget book. On the total program expenditures in 18, the budget was $1,329,000, and then in 19, it was $22,944,000. What was that used for? That's a huge jump in that from year to year. It went down in it will go down in 20, but I'm not clear what that entails. Can someone kind of break that down for me?
Well, there's a lot packed in there, I can tell you that, and so I don't know. But Chris, do you feel like you could answer that question about capital, or should we just provide the answer?
If you want to get back to me, that's fine. Yeah. But I think
the detail would be easier to get back.
There's just so much packed in there, okay. Yeah. And I know I can't recall everything, so we'll get that to you.
Okay, thank you. I have no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Hines?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm back.
Hi, Chris.
So, slide 5, you have the critical incidents, and you don't really have to look it up. You've been doing, your critical incidents have significantly dropped, which means we don't have to fund you as much anymore, right?
Because I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah.
I saw that coming.
One of the critical incidents I'm assuming that you have encountered in the past is related to the other questions about the disruption in our, say, our fiber network, like a crew comes and digs where they shouldn't, and suddenly our fiber line is
sure. I-70 project is cutting a lot of things. Yeah.
There's something going on I-70.
I've heard that.
Does your organization manage the restoration of, say, fiber cuts or whatever?
No, not if it's a third-party fiber that's cut, then they restore that.
But
we count that as a critical incident.
But if the third party cuts the fiber and they pretend like it wasn't them, I mean, you know, like sometimes there's a some finger pointing and some handshaking before, you know, that, like, but meanwhile our fiber's cut, right? So do we proactively repair it, or do we wait until the...
Oh, you're talking about City and County of Denver fiber that's cut by a third party, not
yes.
their own
uh-huh.
fiber.
Yes.
Okay. It can be any number of scenarios. They can acknowledge that they did it and fix it. They can deny that they did it, and we can try to hold them accountable to it. We can go repair that ourselves. All of those options are on the table, and it's almost a case-by-case example. But it's not, I wouldn't say it's not an overwhelming or even all that significant problem in terms of getting them to own up to their responsibilities in that regard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's more of a, the fiber's cut, and we're waiting for them to repair it.
That's a good additional context. I, for some reason, thought that it was more common than how you seem to characterize it. So thank you for the clarity.
I don't think so. Chris, do you have anything? Chris Todd, do you have anything to add on that? Oh, or Jenny?
No.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, any more questions? Well, thank you. Oh, yep, Jenny, sure.
Just to answer.
Oh, you did have something.
Yeah, okay. I do have something.
Not about fiber, because I know nothing about that. To Councilwoman Kenich's question about the $1.8 million, 400-something percent increase, that's actually, I believe it's for the community media center that we're building in the Rocky Mountain Public Media space. The year and the number just jogged with me, but we'll confirm that and get you the details on that, too.
All right, thank you so much, Jenny. Dave, thank you to all of your team. We couldn't do our work without you, so thank you very much. Tomorrow we have a big day with our safety agencies, CPD, National Western, NDCC, the airport, and General Services. So everyone go to bed early tonight.
We have council, we can't go to bed early.
Thank you.